Hello, once again, welcome to the Gratuitous Pausing Podcast. Once again, I'm your host, Alex Greyhawk.
And once again, I'm your co-host, Jack Sneflin.
Thank you for joining us for episode 17 of our Disney bracket. This is the beginnings of our second round of matches, which means all of these films have beaten at least one other Disney film.
These are the more powerful ones, the seasoned ones, the survivors.
This week, we will be discussing 2008's Bolt and 2016's Moana.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, these films have a little bit in common. They both can kind of be considered road trip movies.
Yeah, they're both road trip movies. They both deal with reality versus fiction. They both deal with two people from different walks of life finding a common synthesis. They both have a small, annoying creature that could easily be eaten as like a major companion in the narrative.
It's very true. Here's where we would normally do synopses of the films, but we've already talked about both these films before, so we figured it was not necessary to do. Instead, what we'd like to do is kind of go over the major points from our last discussion of these films and just get everyone up to date.
If you're watching this without having seen those for some reason, those are episodes 1 and 2.
Yes.
Previously on Gratuitous Pausing.
In episode 1, we discussed Bolt versus Snow White. Bolt moved on. Couple highlights. This is Disney's third attempt at 3D animation outside of Pixar. And it kind of shows they've got these plasticky human faces, which we kind of dinged it for a little bit. But the narrative doesn't focus on them too much, so it's not that big a deal. There's also this dynamic between Bolt and Mittens that leads to some great comedy because of how diametrically opposed they are. And for a solid chunk of the first act, they're actually tied together, which leads to some other interesting slapstick until they're eventually separated during a action sequence on a train. The film also has some really good pet politics. One of the main characters is a declawed cat who was abandoned by her family, and the film does a good job of showing just how awful it is for her to try and survive on the streets without any means to defend herself, and makes you really feel for her. There are some not so strong points of the film, though. We have Rhino, the hamster, who is not really necessary to the plot and kind of annoying. The songs in the film are sparse and, for the most part, forgettable. There's also some commentary that the film wants to make about child actors and the way they're treated, but it seems disingenuous coming from Disney. And it also felt like the movie played it too safe with its plot.
Meanwhile, in episode 2, we talked about Moana and how it's incredibly pretty. Here, they definitely mastered the computer animation. The colors are fantastic. The water looks so good. We talked about how they have these two art styles, the standard stylized photorealism and then a more traditional Polynesian art-inspired version. This is mostly for storytelling. It was really cool. We've gotten to the themes of community and your role in the community and how Moana being a leader is a big part of the narrative and how her learning to be a good leader is part of her arc and how her role as a leader means she has to address the traumas in this community that need to be unpacked. We talked about how good her grandma is, of course. We got into how this movie doesn't really have a villain, how its villainness is split between the spreading darkness of Taka, Tamatoa and Maui, and then unpack Maui as a villain and how Moana kind of has to redeem him, and that's part of her growth, and how Maui actually has like a lot of motivation for what he does, a lot of toxic masculinity, and that also comes up with Moana's dad having this legitimate reason for being kind of a no fun dad figure in a Disney movie. And then we had some quibbles about how some of the meta humor doesn't really work. Some of it does, some of it doesn't. It's a bit hit and miss. And then that moved on over Pocahontas.
Yes.
Want to hit those protagonists?
Yeah.
Bolt and Moana are both ostensibly small-town characters. They both have these ideas about being more and learning what their limitations are, and then rising up to those dreams that they have. And it's kind of cool how Moana has the dreams of being this great wayfinder, learns she doesn't really know what she's doing, but then eventually learns how to, and then becomes really good at it. Bolt thinks he's this really cool superhero dog, finds out he isn't, but then over the course of the film, he more or less uses all of his superpowers over the course of saving Penny from a fire. It's interesting to me that there are characters, we'll get into it with Mittens and Maui, but they both have a foil who tells them, no, you can't be all that you dream of, you should give up on that, and they refuse to. And they make their foils be better as well in that process.
I think the biggest difference between Bolt and Moana, besides species, is how ego-driven and sure of himself Bolt is contrasted with this tentativeness and uncertainty that Moana always seems to face when she's trying to figure out whether she should just stay on the island or whether she can go out and sail the sea like she wants to. And after she leaves, whether she feels that that was a good choice or not.
And with Bolt, it's kind of a pride comes before a fall thing. Whereas with Moana, it's a more standard Disney thing of protagonist once more and goes to get it.
With Bolt, typically that sort of narrative, we would not necessarily feel as much for the character, but because he has been forced into involuntary method acting where he believes he has superpowers, we kind of feel for him as his whole worldview comes crashing down around him.
Yeah, it's interesting how much this is basically like Dog Truman Show.
So there's this scene as Bolt and Mittens and Rhino are traveling across the country, and it takes them days, possibly weeks, to eventually get to Hollywood where they're going. And the lightning bolt mark on Bolt's side is painted on for the show. But as he is learning to be just a normal dog as opposed to the super dog that he thought he was, the mark begins to fade and fade. And then at a certain point, it's pretty much completely gone, and it's is nice shorthand for Bolt's journey to finding his true self.
I don't think we talked a lot about it in our first episode, but Bolt has a lot of really good little things. I agree with people who said the plot is kind of safe, but there's a lot of parts of it that the creators worked really hard on making it the best version of that plot.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Moana, the plot's a little bit atypical. That's something we definitely got into a lot of, how this film's structure is a little bit hard to unpack.
Mm. Partially, it's because there's no central villain, really. And you are also trying to balance Maui's story with Moana's.
Mm-hmm.
The typical three-act structure doesn't fit nicely here.
Although, to a certain extent, Bolt also has Mittens as a character who has to arc, and I think it's handled a little more smoothly.
That's because Mittens' arc is much more minor, and all of Mittens' character growth is directly tied to her interactions with Bolt, whereas Maui has his own things that needs to work out, and there's the whole detour into the realm of monsters for Maui.
That's true. Although I think Mittens also has a lot she has to work out. She has her breakdown when Bolt is trying to go back to Penny, and she's like, no, you should stay with me, because she can't imagine a life with an owner because she's been so badly burned by her owners before. They both have this kind of sad backstory that you have to unpack.
Yeah, it's actually interesting how Mittens and Maui both have these issues of abandonment that they have to deal with, and they just deal with it in very, very different ways.
I mean, both get kind of villainous, but Mittens is more gleeful about it.
You're a degenerate creature of darkness.
Yeah, yeah, granted.
Also more overt about it. I mean, Mittens runs a protection racket in New York City for food. Those poor pigeons.
Mittens is a surprisingly dark character for a Disney movie. Although what's also interesting is that both Mittens and Maui kind of have to teach Bolt and Moana how to be what they're supposed to be.
Yeah, where you've got Mittens, who tries to help Bolt to become this normal dog and teaches him how to beg, how to fetch, how to play bow and play with other dogs. And then you've got Maui teaching Moana wayfinding, something that has been lost to her people for generations.
Side note, I looked at that. It's been about 12 generations or so, give or take.
Based on the rocks on top of the mountain?
Yeah. So, a thing I was noticing as I was watching through this time, I feel like the amount of time that has passed since Maui took the Heart of Tafiti is a little bit unclear, because it seems like the events that have happened had to have happened relatively recently, since people seem to still know about the boats. So, I was trying to like look for clues about that, and it seemed like it's happened no more than 200, maybe 300 years ago, which isn't all that long. You still have some cultural memory that could still persist through all that.
They have a strong oral tradition culture, as you can see at the very beginning of the film with Grandma telling the story. And there's also just sort of this assumption that we're dealing with mythic time for the film.
Oh, for sure. But speaking of storytelling, let's talk about how both films have characters who are heavily motivated by stories, but also let down by those stories. Bolt is an actor in a story, and he really thinks that this is true, and that winds up inspiring Rhino to try to be heroic, and he winds up being heroic. And the same with it, Moana is told these stories of Maui that leave out certain details about exactly what happened to Tafiti / Taka, and that's something she has to realize wasn't true and then unpack really quickly.
Another interesting point of comparison, we've already talked a lot about how Moana does not have a strict central villain, but neither does Bolt, really.
Yeah.
So in Bolt, you have the evil Dr. Calico, who is totally fictional and is only a villain in Bolt's skewed perception of reality, but probably the most apt character to peg for villain in this film is Penny's agent.
Yeah. But even then, in any other film, he'd be just like a lackey. He's so minor that he doesn't feel all that threatening.
I kind of disagree. There's a lot of metaphor for Penny sort of trying to be understood in a monetary sense.
Mm.
They very often equate Penny with money. There's a few times where a literal penny is used to distract villains, either on the show or with Bolt in New York when they're trying to get onto the U-Haul truck. And Calico even refers to Penny as
his lucky penny.
And if you understand Penny like that, the agent becomes even more scummy because he is sacrificing Penny's childhood in order to preserve the financial viability of a television show and maintain his paycheck.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I mean, he's not threatening on the grand scale of Maleficent or Dr. Facilier. For this movie, he's definitely threatening. He doesn't have that kind of the scope and the grandeur that we think of as being a Disney villain standard. But it works much better for this because it's a very grounded film.
I also got a lot of Mother Gothel vibes from him as well.
Ooh, I can see that.
And that made me kind of think about it. This happened just before what's considered the Disney revival that started with Princess and the Frog and Tangled and the films after that. And one of the themes that we've kind of been seeing is the mentor figures or parents of the protagonists have kind of been failing them. And this almost seems like a precursor exploration of that, where they wanted to do something along those lines of like, this person should be protecting and looking out for your best interests, but they're not doing a good job or being selfish and doing something for themselves. But they didn't want to necessarily foist that role onto a actual parent. So they have this pseudo guardian stand in for that.
Yeah, basically. He definitely seems like he could have been a guardian for the Baudelaires at some point.
That whole analysis leads me to think of Bolt as what the Great Mouse Detective is to the Disney Renaissance. I think Bolt is to the Disney revival that we're seeing right now.
Yeah, and I know that both Great Mouse Detective and Bolt are argued by some as like the first movies in that era as opposed to the last movies in the era before.
Mm-hmm.
Although, speaking of guardians, both Penny and Moana have really great moms, and I appreciate that. Even though they're relatively minor characters, they both are really stand-up parents. That's really cool. There's a character in Bolt who you could argue as being either a protagonist or an antagonist, depending on what you think is important. Mindy from the network, who is saying, hey, this is really expensive. People aren't really watching it. We're going to shut your show down unless your ratings improve, which seems like an antagonistic thing. But over the course of the film, you realize, hey, this show should probably stop. This is not good for these people. So she's arguably a protector figure, doing what is in this character's best interest, even if she isn't necessarily doing it for them.
I would say that's probably not the case, especially considering there's this scene where after Bolt leaves, Penny's printing out lost dog flyers, and Mindy kind of coerces and strong-arms Penny into starting the show back up with the new Bolt, so that
if we don't get back into production, people are going to lose their jobs. Good people, with families.
True, although I think because she was like, I don't want people to lose their jobs, that makes me more sympathetic towards her because it wasn't just her own pocket she was lining. She was worried about, you know, the boom mic guy, the actors, the stunt people, editors, that kind of thing.
How I read that scene, it was, I know what is going to get Penny to agree to
Ooh,
this.
Ooh, interesting.
As opposed to her actually caring about them. She has no qualms with firing people.
You're right, because she was going to fire everybody in the room. Dang, she's the secret villain here. She's, like, very manipulative. I like her.
She also brings up an unfortunate thing that I noticed in Bolt, is that many of the people of color in the narrative, at least any people of color with lines, are villainous. We have the sort of Morpheus figure that Dr. Calico is speaking to via video chat towards the beginning of the film during the episode that we see of Bolt the TV show. And then we have Mindy. And then there's a few background people of color, but none of them have speaking lines.
Right. Although, speaking of Mindy while we're here, so she says,
"Now we feel for you. And the last thing we want to do is ask a little girl to make a grown-up decision. But it's come to that. We need you to move on. We need you to let Bolt go."
And I think we kind of established that she didn't necessarily mean that it wasn't genuine. That was, you know, for her own interest. Whereas then Moana's grandma does actually say,
"It's not your fault. I never should have put so much on your shoulders. If you are ready to go home, I will be with you."
And she really does mean it.
We've already established how much of a great character that Moana's grandmother is in episode 2. But I did notice some additional stuff with her while watching through this time. So I did talk about how Grandma sacrificed her health to help Moana on her journey and get her going. But literally, as soon as she gives the heart back to Moana, that's when she starts to succumb to her old age. That's when she gets the pain, and not long after, she collapses and dies. And I think it's probably likely that the heart of Titi Fiti was specifically keeping her alive in order for her to help Moana along the journey, and then when the time was right, give up her life in order to allow Moana to proceed her destiny.
It's essentially a passing of the torch down the line.
And in that regard, we effectively have Grandma acting as the voice and guardian of the heart until Moana is able and ready to accept it.
Speaking of passing the torch, I'm not sure if this was intentional or if it's just how things played out. We have Moana's vision in the cave where she sees the previous wayfinders, and we see kind of two central captains of these groups, and both of them are men. And so I like that Moana, at least in the story's narrative where we have three examples, might be the first woman wayfinder, at least of the line that we have. It's a cool thing. I'm glad they don't make a whole big thing of like, "I'm the first woman to do this," because that never works out. But it's a cool little thing that works out on a gender level but doesn't have to be unpacked, because it's the 21st century now. We can just tell those stories without having to handhold through them.
It also works really well because of how much of the narrative focuses on Moana learning to be a leader and improving her leadership skills.
Yeah. So I was less annoyed by Rhino this time around.
I was not less annoyed with him, but I wasn't annoyed anymore. Although I did have another opinion that changed this watching as opposed to last watching.
Oh, go ahead.
So, listening through the last episode, I talked about how I kind of wanted more of the action sequences that we get in the first 10 minutes of the film. That's an episode of Bolt the TV show. And I realized they tried to recreate some of that with the escape from the animal control shelter, as well as on the train. And unfortunately, those scenes dragged. It really brings down my opinion of the middle of the film. There's just so much that you don't need that's kind of just there for spectacle or comedy, and I think that really could have been tightened up. And it's not like we're wanting for action sequences. We see at the very end of the film where Bolt is rescuing Penny, and I think if you did not include the action sequence breakout at the animal control center, that the juxtaposition of the special effects-laden Bolt heroics versus the very down-to-earth heroics of Bolt at the end of the film would be really interesting bookends, but we kind of have this middle part that's not very good.
I'll agree with you, although it might have made the middle of the film feel slow if you didn't have the action there. They could have had other forms of tension, but it'd be a very delicate balance. I definitely agree with you about the train. There's a special place in my heart for Esther, the animal control center. I like the weirdness of this group. They seem like they could be their own thing.
I don't necessarily have a problem with the animal control center in general. I think it's just how they handle it. Like, I don't think we need the huge explosion destroying the truck. There's also the fact that there's effectively two escapes. There's Bolt escaping from the truck with Rhino's help, and then they infiltrate and break out Mittens. And I think you probably only needed one escape.
Or you could have rolled them into one thing where they're in the same building and it's just a, should we go back for her? Yes, we should.
Yeah. And really, the character growth and emotional tension, I think, is the best part of the middle of the movie, where Bolt is understanding that, oh no, I don't have superpowers, and he and Mittens are opening up to each other. I think that's much more interesting than, oh, I'm gonna pepper spray this guy and now my truck has exploded.
That's fair. And you're right, the emotional stuff in the middle is really good. The song montages across the country, the song's forgettable, but the animation there is actually really good, especially when they get to, I want to say, Vegas. Seeing these three act as Misfit family hit those little, like, found family heartstrings that really work for me. So there's this line that I didn't, like, register the first time going through. It's during the action climax where Rhino shouts at the guard who's picking him up,
"Prepare yourself, foul man-beast, or I will beat your pancreas with your spleen!"
Which is amazing. There are nuggets of Rhino gold in there.
Or where he's in the little plastic ball holding up the collapsed structure during the fire. And
it's a good day to die!
Speaking of Rhino, a thing I noticed was there is bits where if the camera is zoomed in close on his plastic ball, the edges will be refracted a little bit just because of the way the plastic works, which is a relatively complicated animation thing for the time. And looking at this and then looking at Chicken Little, which came out 2 years before, sure, not all the animation is great, especially the people, but it's leaps and bounds better than Chicken Little. So they were advancing rapidly. And making it about animals was a great way to let them play to their strengths.
I mean, they did that both with Chicken Little and Bolt. Meet the Robinsons, again, you have, I don't think the plasticiness of the humans in that film is bad, but I think they skewed much more closely to their 2D art styles, which is why that film works a bit better. However, the super dead eyes around all of the characters in Meet the Robinsons do carry over to Bolt. Like, everyone has really awful bags, and their eyes look sunken.
Yeah, that's fair. I think because the faces aren't quite there, it makes you look for the animation that doesn't work more than you would otherwise.
Yeah.
Whereas with Moana, they're stylized. This is an intentional choice as opposed to a limitation. They wanted to go for this particular art style for these creatures.
Mm-hmm. The skin doesn't look like plastic. Like, you can see the intention of pores, and it doesn't have this weird sheen on it anymore. And yeah, they still look like cartoon characters, but I'm okay with that. It's an animated film.
And especially the humans from the island are more grounded, whereas Maui is a little bit more cartoonish. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a good choice to make Maui feel not quite human.
Yeah, I mean, he's huge, but Dwayne The Rock Johnson's also huge, but I'm not sure any normal human could get that huge.
Yeah. And having seen a shocking number of Dwayne The Rock Johnson movies this year, I watched all the Fast and the Furiouses and Rampage and Skyscraper. No, he's not quite at that level. Although, one day, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, I believe in you.
So you brought up Fast and the Furious.
Oh god.
So I do need to talk about that 10-minute action sequence at the beginning of Bolt and how ridiculous it is.
Yeah.
You have three assault helicopters just flying through the city and, like, down highways. And that scene with the Superbark where you have dozens of armored vehicles and helicopters and motorcycles and foot soldiers. How much budget does this television show have? That's a scene that you would see in most movies, but television shows, unheard of completely.
Also, they're doing this all practically.
And they don't do reshoots because of how Bolt's method acting works. That's probably how they keep the costs down and are able to afford it. They don't do reshoots.
I guess.
It's still ridiculous.
Yeah.
There's even this multi-angle shot of this explosion where it just kind of shows the explosion three times. It's all the same explosion, but from three different camera angles just to reinforce, this is awesome!
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I agree with Mindy from the network that this is way too expensive. They should just get a non-method acting dog.
I mean, that's pretty much what happens. And also, you don't see the director after Bolt escapes. It's very likely that he was fired or he left the show because his vision could not be realized anymore.
just like in The Truman Show. Sorry, I'm referencing The Truman Show a lot because my friends over at The Equalizers just did a Truman Show Rocky Horror mashup. If you want to listen to that, we'll link in the description.
I mean, it's also appropriate. They pretty much just Truman Showed this dog into being a superhero.
Yeah, but back to the action sequence. Yeah, I agree it's ridiculous, and I kind of like how ridiculous it is. I also, it's a really small thing, but Calico's evil foot soldiers, guys in bodysuits who seem pretty charming outside of the movie, have these really cool cat lizard claws that spark with electricity, and that's rad as hell, and I want some to cosplay as that. Really cool costume. And this is something I mentioned before about how this movie didn't have to put in the extra work, but they have these actually really cool, intimidating villains just as background, not real things.
I also didn't realize until this watch through, but they all have this green eye logo. It's actually a really cool looking logo.
Yeah, a lot of really cool stuff in there.
Although, I do have to point out that Penny's TV dad does look like bearded adult Jimmy Neutron.
I accept this as canon. That he's an inventor who runs afoul of a person with green eyes, much like in Jimmy Neutron the movie. They had green eyes in that, maybe.
I mean, they had green bodies.
Same thing. Your eyes are the color of your body. That's why my body is blue. Also, I'm a night elf. No, anyway, we've kind of wandered off topic.
I do want to hit up Moana. So one way that we really can't compare these two films is musically. Bolt has almost no music. It just has a couple montage songs. Whereas music plays a central role in Moana and it moves the plot forward. The first three songs, Where You Are, How Far I'll Go, and We Know the Way, all build into setting up Moana's inner turmoil and her relationship with her community. And there's a lot of really interesting subtle stuff going on if you look really closely. Where You Are, while it's, you know, this happy villager song, but it's also about how Moana feels trapped by those traditions of the village and how she resents having the responsibility of leadership thrust upon her. Then we have a sequence with her grandmother explaining that she doesn't have to feel bad for feeling that way and that it's okay for her to follow the instincts that she has to go out to sea. And then we get this intermission where her father takes her up to the mountain and she has this change of heart. And watching it through the second time, I don't buy this change of heart from Moana. And I was kind of feeling really frustrated with the film. And later on, when Moana is attempting to solve the problems with there not being fish, and she mentions going off the reef, and her father doesn't even believe the change of heart either.
A rule that keeps us safe, Dad, instead of endangering our people, so you can run right back to the water.
Every time I think you're past this,
no one goes beyond the reef.
So I didn't feel bad anymore.
Mm-hmm. Saying that she's faking it sounds kind of mean, I guess, but she's trying really hard to do this, and she can't. She can't deny what's inside.
Yeah, and How Far I'll Go really gets into that tension between her responsibility to her community and her wanderlust, and how hard she's fighting to suppress her dreams, because she's afraid that if she gives in, she might never come back. There's a shot in that song specifically that's really good visual shorthand for this, where she has decided that she's going to hop on that canoe and ride out past the reef. And she's running through the village, and we see a close-up shot of her ceremonial garb in the left-hand side of the screen. And in the background, we just see Moana run right past it. And then, giving into that, she's immediately punished by the ocean, and her canoe sinks, and she almost drowns. Then we have the scene with Grandma, and the reveal of their history, and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, Moana goes off on her journey. And then all three of those songs come back and are reconciled together. And Moana realizes that she doesn't have to choose in the song that is literally titled I Am Moana. But it has elements of all three of those songs and they just flow into each other. It doesn't feel forced or awkward. And it's this perfect representation of Moana's journey.
Yeah. Disney putting in the effort to grab the phylactery of Lin-Manuel Miranda so that he writes songs for them was a great choice because he, as we know, brought us Bring It On the Musical and also other good musicals, and he does amazing work here. There's a really cool thing where at the very end, Moana's fixed to Tahiti, she's heading home, and we hear just like a few of the notes from How Far I'll Go as she's coming back, and it's like she's bringing this wanderlust and this desire to explore back to her village. And it's a really subtle thing. They didn't have to do that, but they did. And it's really cool.
Yeah. This film makes really, really great use of reprises and songs.
And honestly, having the music to tie it all together is really helpful because there's so much happening here. You've got myth and legend and all these different arcs and all these traumas to work through, and having these songs to guide us through that is really helpful.
We've talked quite a bit about both of these films. I think it is that time of the week. What's moving on?
I think Moana is. Bolt is really good. I was kind of feeling down before I watched it, then I put it on and I'm like, wow, I feel really good and content. This is a very feel-good movie. And I think it gets left out of a lot of best Disney movies because it came out at the wrong time. It's kind of a weird concept, and I can see how someone might not even give it a chance because of that, but it holds up really well. But then Moana is kind of this juggernaut that descends, and then inside of Moana, the general is like fire when ready, and then it blows up all things around it, so yeah.
I have to agree. I don't remember a lot of the marketing around Bolt, but I can't remember if the whole dog with superpowers was at the forefront and then the 180 in the film was supposed to be a twist. It kind of seems like it, though, especially with how the first part of the film is structured. And I like Bolt. It's a fine movie, but I think that, as Jackson said, Moana is just a juggernaut. It takes everything that Disney is known for and does really, really well and just knocks it out of the park. There are very few nitpicks and flaws that I would pick out of Moana. Most of them are going to come from a cultural appropriation perspective, and that's not something that I'm very knowledgeable about, and I should not be the one judging the film on those merits. Like, I do feel bad for Bolt getting relegated here, because I think it probably could go on further. It just has a bad matchup with Moana. But for a film that was seeded 32nd, dead last in our bracket, making it this far and losing to Moana, I don't think it has anything to feel bad about.
Oh, no. If you haven't seen Bolt, or if you haven't seen it in a while, give it another shot. It really deserves some love. But with Moana moving on, I have a question for you. Because now it is not going to have a chance to go up against Tangled. So here's a big question. Who's the better paladin, Bolt or Maximus?
I think Maximus, because there's this scene where Bolt is holding mittens over a freeway.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, ooh, this is a little dark.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
So, there's a decision. You can tune in next week, where we will be discussing our two misfit movies. We have The Hunchback of Notre Dame versus Wreck-It Ralph. If you've been enjoying our podcast and want to make sure to stay up to date, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. You can also follow us on Podbean, and you will be notified whenever a new episode goes live. Once again, thank you for listening. This has been the Gratuitous Pausing Podcast.